Okay, so at this time, we have speaker cards, and there was one specific request because of commute timing that we'll have this person come first for 3 minutes, and then after that we will have a city of Santa Cruz, which requested 10 minutes, and then I'll go with the other speaker cards afterward. And you know, I did a couple of extra speaker cards, but you know, I'm definitely closing any additional speaker card at this time. I didn't mind helping, you know, those of you who maybe arrived late, but period is closed now. So I would like to ask Kira Redmond for your 3 minute presentation.
Kira Redmond, Executive Director of Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on the integrated report today. For more than 15 years, Santa Barbara Channel Keeper has conducted citizen water quality monitoring throughout the Central Coast region, collecting more than 85,000 data points from dozens of streams across the region. We've raised and invested more than $500,000 over this time in the monitoring and assessment of local watersheds, and therefore have a highly vested interest in the region's integrated report and assessment process. Channel Keeper first wishes to acknowledge and commend regional board staff for their attention to our concerns, needs, and questions, both during this comment period and over the past 15 years of our monitoring. We found your staff to be extremely responsive and helpful, and we are grateful for that. That said, I am here primarily today to express our organization's strong misgivings with the general approach the Central Coast region has taken in developing this integrated report. The region's decision to limit, and the state's decision to limit its analysis to data submitted in 2010 is a major concern for us. We question the legality of moving forward with listing assessments based on six-year-old data when more readily available data is clearly available at this point in time. We find it hard to believe, frankly, that even current CCAMP data, the region's own monitoring program, is not included in this assessment. Even more troubling, as staff outlines in their response to comments, the region is not scheduled for its next assessment until 2020. At that point in time, it will have been 10 years since reasonably current data was used for this purpose. By our own analysis, using Channel Keeper's data, which we have submitted, over a dozen new listings are currently justified for local creeks and wetlands. Those listings are not reflected in the current integrated report. While we appreciate the limitations at play on staff resources, we must publicly acknowledge that by any practical measure, the system is clearly broken, and the regional board, by moving this integrated report forward, is in fact failing to comply with its mandate under the Clean Water Act to conduct biennial assessments using readily available data. We respectfully ask the board to deny approval of this draft and to direct staff to initiate an assessment of regional water quality conditions using all readily available data. Thank you.
Thank you. And next, we have Akin Bebatola. This will be 10 minutes.
While they're loading that up, introduce myself. I'm Akin Bebatola, the Laboratory and Environmental Compliance Manager for the City of Santa Cruz, and with me are other staff scientists and resource managers from the City of Santa Cruz. And like the speaker before me, I want to compliment the board staff for their accessibility and cordiality throughout this whole process. All of us were stunned by the data limitations, the timing, the cutoff, but we understand the process. We understand that this is being done to fulfill obligations that the board is committed to. Having said that, we'd like to take this opportunity to offer a data-driven alternative assessment to specifically the beaches in Santa Cruz City that are now proposed to be listed based on that data, much less on the age of the data, but on the quality of the data. From our conversation with staff, we understand that all of these beaches, and in your report you're going to find that they're all listed for impairment under total coliform, and that the data for that emanates strictly from the Beach Watch program. However, the listing, the impairment, is relative to shellfish harvesting, which requires a much lower threshold for total coliforms than the AB 411 or the Beach Watch program specifies. So going through briefly what we intend to do here, given the presentation you have in front of you, is to identify the implicit error in processing that data for this purpose, is to highlight to you that if this went forward, even though it's simply completing a process, there is nothing that's going to stop the blighting of all these beaches when there's data that says they are not impaired, not even by the shellfish harvesting program. So we're going to highlight these to help the board to reach conclusions that we have reached, that you can avoid economic and social damage that would be attendant to using this data on these beaches. And we will show you from two specific beaches in our area where, for other reasons, we've had to monitor that when you use the matrix appropriate methods, the medians and even the single sample data do not threaten the threshold for shellfish harvesting. And finally, we will present both graphics and data to indicate that the stretch of the beach that's identified as Cowled Beach that's impaired was and probably still is to some degree impaired only within a narrow stretch. In other words, to describe a approximately 2,000 to 3,000 feet stretch of the beach as impaired, again, blights a whole area for something that's traceable to less than 300 feet attached to an infrastructure where improvements have been made and where data, which we'll present, shows that that's happened. Having stated all that, we couldn't have done this without the cooperation of staff, which, again, I want to emphasize, have done a wonderful job and hopefully will agree with us that this is the logical conclusion to not list these beaches until data of the appropriate quality, not necessarily because it's in Sedan, but because it's used, it's based on matrix appropriate methods are applied to that area. So what we're told is that the shellfish harvesting thresholds are twofold, that the median has to be less than 70 MPN per 100 ml, and that less than 10% of the samples monitored can exceed 230 also MPN per 100 ml. The stretch of the area, that part of which we belong to, from Point Ano Nuevo to Soquel Point, which all of our six beaches are affected by, is a stretch that is on record for shellfish harvesting. That consideration may be true for the non-urban areas. It's a little difficult to see that activity within the urban beaches of the city of Santa Cruz. That's just a persuasive point to let you understand why this impairment, this essentially blighting of that beach, may be to no purpose. So all of the following tables that you're going to see are compiled from analysis of membrane filtration done through membrane filtration, using standard methods 9222B at our environmental laboratory at the City of Santa Cruz. All of the analyses were performed either in support of routine sanitary surveys or by investigations initiated by the city's environmental compliance program or some other city-mandated programs. The reason I need to communicate this is we hadn't spent all the time to continuously monitor the areas. We monitor in response to requests or some other program, but all the data indicates that what you have is truly reflective of those beaches. So this is why our data range is limited and the number of data points are limited, but they provide a very accurate and truly diagnostic state of the beaches for total coliforms. So again, to reiterate, that's what the National Shellfish Sanitation Program currently prescribes. And of course, I'm aware, and hopefully the board is aware too, and hopefully this is of some persuasive evidence that even they are considering a different approach than total coliforms for protection of shellfish harvesting. So you don't have to read through all these numbers, but if you look at the third column there, first of all, let's start from the date column. So this is Natural Bridges, one of the six beaches listed for impairment here. And the data stretches on this page from August of 2013 and ends in April of 2014. And when you look to the far right, you're going to see all the medians. Again, if you went back to the previous slide, the controlling number is 70 MPN per 100 ml for the median, and perhaps 10% can exceed 230. Now, you can see here, no number reaches 100, much less 230. That's in the middle column. And in the far column, no number reaches 70. And that's the same for Mitchell's Cove, which starts here. The data here was compiled in 2010, and I recognize that some of this data would have qualified for inclusion had this been a program that reports through CEDIN. But as I said before, this is a program that's run in response to community environmental issues, whether sanitary surveys or whether complaints by citizens that the environmental compliance program of the city invests the resources using appropriate methodology to decipher what's going on. And again, consistent with Natural Bridges, on the far right column, you do not see any median approaching 70 at all. There is one instance, February 14th, 2011, where one sample exceeded 280. That doesn't amount to 10%. And this continues for Mitchell's Cove. That data gathering continues all the way through 2013 on this page and concluded in 2014. Again, because this is not a constitutive program of beach monitoring for the city of Santa Cruz, we divert resources and focus on where the community's needs are. But the data is persuasive. It's of the highest quality. It's actually of a higher quality than some that would have been submitted to the Beach Watch program. So the previous slides have shown for two of our six listed beaches that there is no scientifically defensible data based on high-quality analysis that would qualify these data for inclusion. These beaches for inclusion. Now, there's a special case for an iconic part of our beach called Cowles Beach. And that's been known to be impaired for both total and fecal coliforms. And part of the issue that the board needs to consider for the case we're making is that the general name, Cowles Beach, which is how it's listed in this attachment number 2, extends to more than 1,000 linear feet of the beach. The problem area is less than 300 feet. Is that for me?
Yeah, I see you're on slide 12 out of 21, so I'll give you just a little bit more time, but
I'll do 1 minute and that'll be it.
All right, fair enough.
Thank you. So the issue with Cowles Beach is that the beach is not impaired. A stretch that has infrastructure was impaired, and maybe it still is impaired slightly. And this is a shot of the area. And this graph you're seeing was submitted to EPA's monitoring program as part of an abstract recently to show how the precision of our methodology helped us identify where and only where the problem was rather than the entire stretch of the beach. And this last slide, and I was glad, I was impressed by the board's attention to the tables and images that Mary had shown earlier. And you can see, especially towards the far right, how the efforts, the infrastructural efforts that have been made at the infrastructure has truncated the bacteria drastically. So you could barely see anything. Thank you. I think the case is made that we shouldn't list these beaches because of the adverse economic consequences, which are unnecessary.
Thank you. Next will be Kay Mercer, and then Rhonda Sandquist after that. And Kay, this is your three-minute request.
Thank you. I'm Kay Mercer with KMI. And first of all, I want to commend staff on their very thorough efforts. And on, I would like to thank them for assistance in trying to understand the integrated report. I'm providing the following comments from a public member perspective, and you've already heard some of these comments. The data sets were too large for a 30-day review process. The staff report links, I worked with Mary, the staff report links did not link us to the 2014 data. It took us to 2012 data, and the listing proposals and the data didn't align, and so that caused a little bit some issues that we worked through. It was not possible to find details about the biointegrity assessment, the tools that were used, unless you had the 2014 data. And so when I initially started looking at the data, I wasn't able to access the tools to understand how they did the assessment. The concerns about the use of these nutrient numeric endpoint, biostimulatory, bioindicator, biointegrity tools, because these are all synonyms that are used essentially for the same tools, have been articulated by members of a broad and diverse state water board stakeholder advisory group that was convened to work on the statewide nutrient policy for inland waters and estuaries. This group wrote in June 2015 to the state water board, overall nutrient policy development process is trending in the direction of developing numeric objectives or targets which will be unattainable in many water bodies and are being established prior to development of essential information and in advance of weighing in on practical realities of implementation and various policy alternatives. I share these concerns about as staff uses the biologic tools for listing purposes. Only a small, fairly incestuous group of scientists are working on these tools. I don't know if they've been challenged as well as they should have been. The biological indicator tools rely on a reference. Watersheds, one of those is the Big Sur watershed, and you heard information earlier today about the Big Sur watershed. Reference watersheds are supposed to be representative of the conditions found in watersheds that have a lot of man-influenced impairment, and the scientists that are actually working on these issues have shared with me that the Central Coast has special issues in that there are not adequate reference watersheds. So using these biologic indicator reference watershed-based tools are very problematic and probably not really appropriate for the Central Coast. So considering the cost and the regulatory requirements triggered by the integrated report, listing should be based on readily accessible, transparent, and vetted science that the public understands. Lines of evidence developed using the biological integrity tools fail to meet those requests or those requirements, and therefore the listings utilizing these tools, I think, should be removed from this integrated report. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next, Rhonda Sandquist and then Bridget Hover afterward.
Good morning, Chairman and Board. My name's Rhonda Sandquist. I'm with Brownstein, Hyatt, Farber, and Schreck. I'm making comments this morning on behalf of Anthony Costant Sons, a grower who has property near Chular Creek. We are supporting the regional staff's recommendation to delist the northern portions of Chular Creek for temperature. Staff's decision was based on temperature data of the area and their site visit. Freshwater discharges are very low and sometimes even non-existent in this street reach of Chillar Creek. So temperatures are often more closely related or correlated with what the ambient air temperatures may be. We realize that now that we have looked closer at Chillar Creek and really looked at defining the northern version section from the southern section, that there are likely other differences that have not yet been recognized. We are not certain that this upper reach of Chillar Creek supports a rainbow trout habitat or rainbow trout species. We will continue to look into that, and we look forward to working with the regional staff on looking at the appropriateness of pH and turbidity listings under the 303D for the upper reaches of Chillar Creek. But this is information we'll work with them on for the next round. We appreciate your time and request that the temperature listing for the northern portion of Chillar Creek be removed from the 303D list. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And Bridget Hover, and then Kevin Collins afterward.
Good morning, Chairman, board members. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Bridget Hoover. I'm the director of the Water Quality Program for the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. And I am here to respectfully request that staff consider an off-cycle analysis of PCBs in Monterey Bay with the data collected by the Central Coast Long-Term Environmental Assessment Network, the CLEAN program. It was recently brought to my attention that Monterey Bay was not proposed on this current list to be listed as impaired for PCBs, and we've known for several years that there have been regular exceedances of the ocean plan objective for PCBs as a result of the CLEAN monitoring. There are the three harbors within Monterey Bay that are being listed for PCBs on this current list, and as you're probably aware, PCBs are complex compounds that historically were used as lubricants and coolants and as carriers for pesticides that were applied aerially in the watersheds for agricultural operations in both Pajaro and Salinas Valleys. We know that the sea lions and more notably the orca are heavily burdened with PCBs, and that can definitely affect or most probably affect their health. So the CLEAN program has been collecting 30-day composite samples twice a year in two locations within Monterey Bay since 2004. And the analysis of that data has showed out of 28 samples, 20 of them exceeded the water quality objective in the ocean plan for PCBs. And the average of those exceedances were up to 480% above the water quality objective in the ocean plan. In looking additionally to see what are the possible sources of these PCBs, there was some statistical analysis done, and we believe that there is some correlation between the high concentrations in the bay with dredge material from the harbors. So we have recently been talking with EPA, Army Corps, Water Board staff about this, and we've made some progress. And now EPA is requiring the monitoring to be more comparable with the CLEAN data so that we're able to maybe make the connection of whether the harbors are sources of PCBs or not. So we are working towards that. All of the data is in the CEDIN database, so it should be a pretty seamless download of this data and analysis to potentially list Monterey Harbor Monterey Bay as impaired. And in doing that, EPA and Army Corps have to, it takes different criteria to be able to dispose of those dredge materials in the bay if the bay is impaired. So we're happy to provide more information at a later date if you would like, and Dane Harden is here in the audience too if you have specific questions about the PCBs. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin Collins, and then last will be Michelle Bender.
Good morning. Kevin Collins, Santa Cruz County. I compiled and submitted the data relative that describes the temperature problem in the San Lorenzo River. The scientist who was the source of that information and also assembled the Excel schedules, Don Alley, has decades of experience in the San Lorenzo and also in numerous other watersheds in the Central Coast, including the Carmel. I wanted to respond to a couple comments the city had made relative to this issue. There's the implication that there's no point in this because global warming is going to wipe out everything south of San Francisco by destroying the conifer forests. This was cited as a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration estimate. I don't think we can really stand here and say we should give up now because we're going to fail at dealing with climate change. But in any case, the issue of temperature in streams began way north of the San Lorenzo River. It began up in watersheds like the Eel and the Klamath and other North Coast rivers that were severely damaged often by commercial logging and large-scale impoundments. And there are a number of steps that could be taken in the San Lorenzo that would improve its temperature profile. Its upper water, the rearing streams are in the upper watershed. In other words, the creek segments where coho salmon and steelhead will successfully continue to survive during their rearing process when they're small and they're living in the stream are normally cold water because they're supplied by springs, their groundwater source. So the entire basin doesn't have to be brought into compliance for this issue of temperature to be resolved in a successful way so that these salmonids are not driven extinct. So I just wanted to thank the board staff for paying attention and carefully reviewing the information I submitted, and I look forward to seeing a TNDEL adopted in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment. And last, Michelle Bender. And you requested five, but it's 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Wolf and board members. My name is Michelle Bender, and I am here on behalf of the Earth Law Center. Today, my testimony is to urge you to revise the draft integrated report to specifically identify flow-impaired waterways in Category 4C of the report. We appreciate the changes that were made in response to our comments. However, they do not go far enough to reflect the data, the language of the Clean Water Act, and U.S. EPA guidance. There is sufficient data before you, and which we have also provided in our comments, to list numerous waterways as impaired for altered flow in Category 4C. These include the Salinas River, Carmel River, San Clemente Creek, Big Sur River, and the Santa Maria River. There is a misconception that the integrated report is limited to pollutants. That approach confuses Sections 305B and the TMDL program. Section 305B and the integrated report as a whole direct actions to improve waterway health overall. Waterway health is reflected in the chemical, biological, and physical status of the waterway. This is Clean Water Act Section 101 language. Flow is therefore a physical component. Without flow, the waterway cannot support life. Limiting the integrated report as proposed ties your hands and misdirects your resources, contrary to the intent of the Clean Water Act and implementing regulations. The staff report also says that you cannot identify flow-impaired waters in Category 4C because there isn't a process for doing so in the listing policy. But the listing policy is only applicable to the creation of the Section 303D list of impaired waters, which is Category 5 in the integrated report. Category 4C is not addressed by listing policy by definition because Category 4C addresses waters impaired by pollution, not pollutants. In other words, the listing policy is irrelevant to Category 4C, and it cannot be used as a justification to avoid identifying these waters. U.S. EPA has issued repeated guidance documents over the last 10 years, including guidance last year and this year, that emphasized the need to identify flow impairments in Category 4C of your integrated report. The response to our comments refers to U.S. EPA guidance from 2005, but ignores the clear language of the guidance in 2006, which we quoted in our 2010 Integrated Report Scoping comments, and which say that flow-impaired waterways will be identified in Category 4C. The response to comments also ignores EPA guidance and reports from 2015 and 16 that are even more clear on this point. These state, and I quote, that EPA recommends reporting impairments due to hydrologic alteration in Category 4C, which are those impairments due to pollution not requiring a TMDL. EPA's guidance also specifically states flow impairments as one example of a Category 4C listing. The San Diego Regional Board recently approved an integrated report that identified 30 waterway segments impaired by flow for listing in Category 4C, either with a Category 5 pollutant or listing alone. San Diego used a variety of techniques to identify hydrologic impairments, including desktop aerial reconnaissance. Flow standards were not required to be developed first. And this is also reiterated in current EPA guidance. So finally, we urge you to revise the draft staff report by adding to your integrated report in Category 4C specific listings for waterways impaired by flow. Thank you.
Thank you. So this concludes the speaker cards, comments, request. And our staff plans on providing response and comments to, you know, the various comments we receive from the speakers. Before that, do we have any other question from the board before we? Yes, go ahead.
So, question for Mary. In the Santa Cruz comment, the reference to the beach watch data and a suggestion that the methodology there is questionable. Can you talk a bit about that data? And then I think also maybe a comment about why CDEN is the database that makes it possible for you to actually do this analysis of mountains and mountains of data.
So. May I suggest, Dr. Hunter, that, you know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but staff was planning to, you know, have probably a pretty comprehensive response on this item that was covered in 11 minutes, and maybe as a whole, and then after you hear back from staff, then, you know, you can drill in a little bit more.
Okay.
If that's okay with you?
Yeah.
Thank you. So,
okay, well, the City of Santa Cruz brought up several different points regarding the beach water quality data assessment. One of those points was the methodology used is not appropriate for the marine matrix, the marine waters. And if you look at the end of the packet that includes the presentation the city gave, the very last attachment, is a document that is the recommended methods for analysis for the AB 411 program. And then if you flip to page 2 of that attachment, Akin has kindly highlighted the relevant section that tells us that the Collier 18 method, which is the method used.
I can't follow. Which document are we talking
about? Oh, sorry. At the very end of the package that contains
the PowerPoint?
Yeah.
Okay, I was looking at the research. So.
The fourth document that's attached there. It's titled Recommended Methods for Analysis of AB 411.
So that's page 2 of 4?
Yeah, and then if you flip to the second page, you'll see this big orange
that's
highlight.
What's the title of the document?
It's titled Recommended Methods for Analysis of Recreation Marine Waters for AB 411.
Thank you. You're on page 2?
Thank you. Thanks for slowing me down.
Thanks.
So if you flip to the second page where this highlighted section is, it clearly states in this recommended methods document that the Collier 18 method, which is the method being used for the AB 411 data, can measure false positives. It can identify things that are not actual coliforms as part of its as a positive result. And then it goes on to say that it doesn't recommend using the call alert method for total coliforms. So this information was news to me. I am not part of the state's beach water quality work group. We do have staff on that work group. But it was of concern to me that the data were being used and there's this clear recommendation. So I reached out to the beach water quality work group folks at State Board. Unfortunately, I haven't heard back from them yet because I just saw this on Tuesday, as did you, or Monday afternoon, I'm sorry. And haven't heard back. But I believe the appropriate way to address this is to work with the beach water quality work group folks who are heavily involved with the AB 411 monitoring. And if their recommendation is that this total coliform data with this method should not be used for beaches, then I believe that that work group should make a recommendation to the assessment unit at the state board level, and these assessments should be removed. And that can happen at a future date without our regional board doing anything. That can happen before state board approves this 2014 integrated report, assuming this is all what recommendation they would make. It could happen with the 2018 integrated report. It could happen at any number of stages between now and when we get back to our 2020 updates. But I cannot make a strong recommendation because I personally am not familiar enough with these methods, nor do I know much about this document other than I'm reading it. But it does give me pause, and I hope that the beach work group will work with the assessment unit to provide guidance on what should be done on this issue. And then secondly, the city brought up some implementation practices they've put in place, specifically bird exclusions and things like that around some of the beaches that are being proposed for addition to this list for total coliform and the shellfish beneficial use. And although I encourage you to continue to toe the line here and use the data from 2010 to inform updates to this list, what we could do is annotate those listings where appropriate, and assuming that we'd have to look at the data before we do this, but if we wanted to, we could look at the data. If the data do support that the problem is fixed since something was implemented on a certain date, we can annotate the listing and say that to publicly on the 303D list, recognize that something has happened since this list was updated and that we anticipate this will be removed from the list at a future date as a result of this implementation. And I feel like that would be in line with the guidance we've received to base our decisions solely on the data, but also recognize the good work that's done and the what appears to be a solution to this pollution problem. So those were kind of my summary points related to the city's presentation. If you guys don't have additional comments, I can speak to Dr. Hunter's additional question.
I have a question on the
go ahead.
City of Santa Cruz. Verbally and in writing about economic and social damage result of this proposed listing. Can someone explain that? If not, then I'd like to ask.
I think I should ask Akin to speak to that. I can maybe summarize, but I think he could better answer your question.
Thank you very much. The economic damage, it should be obvious because Santa Cruz, one of its main sustaining industries is hospitality. And it's been on record that when the beach is posted, for whatever reason, tourists, buses divert and go someplace else. It hurts economically. And it's not easy to estimate how much traffic doesn't even show up because that's been communicated that that area is impaired. That's the clear economic disadvantage from it.
So I was ignorant about the resulting signage that might go in place to scare the public away. Can someone describe what kind of signage might be result of listing as proposed?
Absolutely none would be posted as a result of being on the 303D list. The signage goes up when it's not instantaneous, but the very next day, because it takes 18 hours to get the results. So sample collected Tuesday, we get the results Tuesday afternoon, we should post until results from a future sampling event show that there's not a problem anymore.
But do you post when it's above 70, or do you, I mean, when do you, I don't understand, sorry. Can you help me?
You want me to? The agency that does the monitoring that uses the Collidot method is not the city, but it communicates to the city the status of the beach, and then the city, in response, posts and says the beach is probably unsafe for swimming because it's been determined that the indicators are higher than the recommended levels. What the broadcast of this posting does is to actually further lower that threshold. So the AB 411 threshold, questionable as it is, using Call Alert, is high. And often that's violated at what is called Cowles Beach, but really at the wharf. Now, if it's published that the waters in that whole area are impaired, not specifically for swimming, people are not likely to invest further to say, oh, it's just for shellfish harvesting. It's just that it's a bad beach. It's 4 miles.
So I still don't understand the link between posting signs that warn and the 303 listing.
In my opinion, they're not similar. We don't, as far as I know, no one posts a beach for bacteria data based on 303 listing. But there have been other places, like Pinto Lake is one example, where information that related to the 303D list resulted in posting. But that's because we didn't really have a standardized procedure for posting, whereas the beaches is a very, I mean, there's the entire AB 411 program that has defined rules of when a beach is posted. It's posted immediately, getting a result that says the beach is exceeding a criteria, and it remains posted until we have a result that shows that it's not exceeding the criteria. The 303D list does not result in posting other than, it's not a posting, but it's a state-approved document that says, in general, this beach is exceeding the criteria for shellfish.
But the public in general who are touristing don't see that document, and it doesn't get published in a way that would scare tourists away. So is it staff's opinion that whether we list or don't list these Santa Cruz beaches won't have an effect on signage or economy? Because of signage,
yeah, I agree. It will not affect signage, or it shouldn't.
Akeen, are you concerned about anything other than the results of signage impact on
no,
the economy?
I'm concerned about the publicity that attends the 303D listing. The city is already working on a TMDL on San Lorenzo River. The general impression is therefore that all of the watersheds, including the near shore, are all bacteria-laden and are therefore not healthful for people's exposure. It isn't just going to be because of the 303D listing. Once we leave here, if it's the board's decision to include all these beaches, there's no way you're going to communicate to the newspapers that it's strictly for this purpose. Not going to be any, especially once there's a question as to the validity of the data that's being used, even for the shellfish harvesting.
Okay, so you're concerned about signage in situ and the publication and broadcasting of information about our board listing these beaches.
Right, I'm concerned not about signage, but about the communication that the water quality is bad. That's what the 303D listing does.
Okay.
It's not signage.
Thank you, Akeen.
And Dr. Hunter had follow-up question on this topic, but I think along the line, I think there's a need to give a quick 101 refresher about this process. This is not the absolute end. Once, let's say, we adopt this, it still has to go through state board review. There's still a process of further comments. I think you need to give a little refresher that this is not the end of the line.
Agreed. The list that we approve at this level is then sent to State Board, combined with the list from the other two regions that are in Group 2, and then State Board releases those recommendations for changes to the public. There's a public comment period and a State Board hearing on that. So that was why I recommend to this board that we work with state board staff starting this week already and the Beach Watch work group to get to the bottom of this situation. If in fact these data should not be, or these methods are not appropriate for marine waters, then that work group should recommend to the assessment unit at the state level not to do this statewide. This affects multiple regions, not just us.
Thank you for helping providing that clarification. And Dr. Hunter?
And Dr. Hunter's additional question was about why CDEN is the source of data for this update, or was there?
Yeah, before you answer that one, just so I'm clear, the document that you referred to is regarding the Beach Watch data. So there is a question about the methods or and or the criteria, and that you, at this point you're midstream in clarifying what the methods and what the methods are and how that may not be appropriate for this review, for your analysis. Is Beach Watch data entered into CDAN? Or
it is.
It is. So in some ways it meets the CDAN format and criteria, but can you clarify then for me, if it's in CDAN, why would it be considered questionable in terms of its methodology?
It's the fact that this method is used in marine waters. So that matrix, for whatever reason, and I didn't dive into that level of detail, but the marine water, the salty matrix, does have other organisms that present as a false positive. That doesn't seem to be a significant problem when using the freshwater matrix. So for streams, this method is fully appropriate for total coliform enumeration. But in marine waters, there apparently is some documentation indicating that it can cause false positives, overestimate the true value, the true count of coliforms. So I think that is the main concern here, and that should be addressed statewide because these data are being used in multiple coastal regions.
Oh, okay, and so that has real implications.
Yeah.
So you're pursuing this with the Beach Watch work group will result in relooking at all data that was entered for beach data.
Yes, if in fact this is an inappropriate method for marine waters, then I think the Beach Watch group will make a recommendation to do something differently statewide, not just for our region.
Okay, good. That's good. And then as far as CDAN, can you just give a little bit more clarity to why CDAN is the standard database? And then you mentioned there are other sources. We know CCAMP I'm forgetting the other one that you mentioned.
Operative Monitoring Program for Agriculture.
Yeah, but then we had Bridget Hoover mention CLEAN data. And so can you talk about those data sets and where they, how they integrate or do not integrate with CDAN?
Yeah, definitely. CDAN's been a long time coming. We have, Karen and Dave Paradis in particular, have been beating that drum for years and talking about we need one database, all in the same format, all held to the same quality and documentation. And so CDAN is now up to speed, and multiple programs are delivering data. All of the historic CCAMP data to current is in CDAN. Same is true for the Cooperative Monitoring Program for Ag. All of their data is now available in CDAN. Multiple programs, the CLEAN program, the City of Salinas' permit data goes into CDAN. And then also many volunteer programs in our region as well, including the Santa Barbara Channel Keepers. They're starting the process of getting their data into CDAN as well. So now that CDAN is up and running and is the data warehouse, basically, for our surface water, the State Board has gone so far as to amend the listing policy to specifically say that CDAN is the source of data to be used for updates to the 303D list. Now, the exception is CDAN doesn't hold all types of data. There are some data formats they don't have a way to store yet. They're working on it, but they don't have it. And those are things like continuous monitoring data where we have 70 million temperature data from a given stream or something. So those formats that literally don't fit into CDAN, the policy does have an exemption and say they can also be submitted and considered. But for every data type that does fit into CDAN, CDAN is going to be the source for those type of data. So I personally work with several people to help them get the process started and start learning about how to use those formats. And there's a regional data center based out of Moss Landing whose sole purpose is to help users and get their data in to the CEDIN database. So we do have some resources available. And now that it's in the listing policy, our hands are, you know, our process is tied to that data source.
So can you respond to Bridget Hoover's comments about the Monterey Bay as a whole relative to the three harbors and what it might mean? Because the suggestion that she posed that by listing Monterey Bay as a whole and their views on dredging and perhaps having some way to change dredging policy as to where dredging is deposited within the bay so that we start to see some reduction of these PCBs impacting marine life.
Definitely. So specifically, she mentioned the PCB data. This assessment cycle, we are adding all three of those harbors, Monterey, Moss Landing, and Santa Cruz, to the list for PCB specifically. I looked at the WDR for Moss Landing, and the monitoring and reporting program does not currently require that they monitor for PCB, but I did speak with staff this week and discuss that, and they told me that they are planning to revisit that WDR in the coming year. And I provided them with all of the pollutants that are on the 303D list and asked that they evaluate those and consider including them in updates to the MRP there.
This is the WDR for the dredging activities.
The dredging activity, yeah, thank you. I did not dive into the Santa Cruz and Monterey permits for the dredging activities, but we will be working with staff to notify them of the listings for those harbors and asking them to consider that in future updates to those permits as well. Now, with respect to the request from Bridget and the Sea Clean program to evaluate the PCB data, the Sea Clean nearshore data in the off cycle, those data are now in CEDIN. She's correct. It would be they are in the format that is easy to use and identified as available. But I want to make the point that it is a huge effort to undergo this process. It's not just the data assessment, but it's also preparing that information and bringing it to this board for your approval and getting it to state board. And so I just wanted to make you aware there's multiple steps, and although it should be quite simple, it's not. And remind you that those data that are in the CEDIN database are available to the public. Now, CCAMP website does not currently display the harbor data or the nearshore data, but the capability is there, and perhaps that's something we could talk about doing so that the data is disseminated and compared to criteria and more visible, if that's a high priority for us. And I think we could talk about some other options too. But in terms of what we should do related to this list, I just want to make you aware of the resources it takes to even evaluate one parameter for multiple locations and bring it back to this board.
So where do you see in the cycle going forward, where do you see the Monterey Bay, that broader data set coming, actually being integrated and
well,
taking account of what we know?
Yeah. If things proceed as scheduled now, we will be soliciting for new data in late 2018, early 2019, with the goal of approving the 2020 integrated report in mid-2020.
Okay. And from a workload perspective, just to touch on, so when Bridget mentions doing an off-cycle listing, that terminology essentially means having us do this process between now and 2020. So we're scheduled to do it for the 2020 report. If we did an off-cycle listing, we would do it sooner than that. And at this time, staff doesn't want to commit to doing that based on the issues that Mary talked about, just the amount of resources it takes for us to do this, even to prepare for 2020. Us doing that off-cycle listing doesn't reduce the amount of workload that we then have to do in 2020. And so certainly we continually, as an organization, every year with our work planning for all the units, look at what is the most important. And we'll look at this, and we will consider whether or not doing an off-cycle listing for a number of things makes sense. But we definitely don't want to commit to doing that at this point.
Yeah, but from what I heard Mary describe in terms of the three harbors, that we do have other modes or other pathways,
yes,
to looking at that particular issue and beginning to use other tools.
Correct. Even if we don't change the list between now and 2020, we've already started the process of working with our internal staff that are updating those permits. So we might be able to accomplish some of the things that Bridget's interested in having accomplished without having to update the list first.
Right, which I think is important, again, to remind us all that we have many different tools at our disposal. So current data, as Mr. Robertson, who just disappeared, pointed out, current data is informing staff action in other programs. So 303D is just one of the ways in which we identify high-priority problems. So I'm encouraged to hear that, Mary, you've already taken steps to start this conversation with other staff who have oversight over the three harbors and looking at the different regulatory tools we have there to start to understand what we can do about dredging materials and the appropriate changes that should be made. This seems pretty straightforward to me in terms of PCBs. Everybody knows what those are. So thank you. Okay, that helps.
And at this time, I know some of my fellow board members still have questions, including myself, but we will now take a recess. We will have a closed session, and we will take a 90-minute break because of this closed session that will be probably a bit lengthy. So I would like us to reconvene at 1:30. Thank you.
Before we break, just to have on the record, the board will meet in closed session to discuss pending litigation as authorized by Government Code 11126, Subdivision E2A. Specifically, the board will discuss Carmen Zamora and Environmental Law Foundation versus Regional Water Quality Control Board. Thanks.